Hi, I'm E. Christopher Clark, and not screwing up. Sorry.
You do this on purpose, don't you?
I'm so used to doing my own.
No, you know what?
This is way back.
This is an episode without an introduction now. No, you blew it. You blew it for everyone.
But I can't ever remember if I'm supposed to.
No,
I'm
you know
Christopher
what?
Clark,
no.
And you're John Martin.
Yeah, I'm
and
John
this
Martin.
Is Generation Goat.
Yeah, and this is Generation Goat. Probably this number 22.
Number 22. See, what screws me up is that I used to do a podcast by myself where I say, hi, I'm Christopher Clark, and you're listening to the Geek Force 5 cast, and da-da-da-da-da, and I did that every day for, like, close to a year, and so it's just in my brain.
Yeah. That's fine.
I'm sorry.
As usual, your ego will not even permit my existence when I'm sitting right in front of you. That's, that's interesting.
My ego is, you know, as the egos of many shy people are, is completely overdeveloped.
Yeah.
You know, shy
well,
people.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah. I read something recently about shyness being the ultimate form of egomania or something where I'm shy or people like me are shy because we think we're more important than everyone else or something like that.
I don't know. I'm told by this myth that shyness can stop you from doing all the things in life you'd like to, but that's all I know about shyness, really.
There's a lot to learn from this myth.
There is.
There is a light that never goes out.
Although, then there's things like, you know, is there any point to ever having children? Oh, I don't know. Well, thanks, Morrissey. That's super helpful, you know. Poor Morrissey. Actually, he's been going around lately moaning about the fact that, well, that's not surprising, but about the fact that he currently is without a record label, and, you know, he has a new record ready to go, and, you know, I've heard some of it. It sounds all right, but I don't think that's the way to get a record label. I don't think that works.
I don't think so. Also, has he not looked around and seen what people have luck they've had without a record label?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what his deal is. I think he just likes to moan about it. And, you know, it's Morrissey. But I think he could keep a record label if it wasn't for the fact that after every single album, he spends all his time talking about how the label screwed him and, you know, prevented it from being the biggest album ever in the history of humankind. And
that would have nothing to do with the fact that he's, you know...
Yeah, you know.
And old.
No, just... No. He says that record labels are stacked against people who have already made their mark. Because they're constantly looking for, you know, new meat, as it were. And there might be a point in there.
Yeah.
But there might also be a point that he's notoriously difficult to work with.
Right.
So, and he keeps signing these one album contracts.
So, you know. So there's a lack of commitment on his part as well.
I think so. Oh well, poor Morrissey. I almost feel bad, except whenever he makes these pronouncements, he's usually in like Rome or, you know, somewhere nice and looking very happy and driving around rich cars. So, you know, it's hard to feel bad for Morrissey.
I have a problem with feeling bad about characters in fiction that are in European cities, and my students.
Well, no, some of them are terrible. I mean,
some of them.
Manchester, admittedly, yes.
Right. If you're stuck in Manchester, okay, I'm with you. If you're stuck in Paris drinking wine, as I've told my students, I'm not interested in your story. Like,
it's just a good place to be stuck.
You know, you're in Rome drinking wine. Also, probably not all that interested in your story, but. Mm. Just, you know,
yeah,
I, maybe, is it just the American in me? Is that it, or?
No, it's just, you know, it's easier to have a comfortable time in some of those cities, and so it's hard to feel bad for, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, but I think you're right. I think it's not all, now that I think about it, it's not all European cities, because where does,
yeah.
Third to last chapter of A Visit from the Goon Squad takes place in a European city in Italy. It might be Venice. I'm not sure. It's not Rome, You know, and if it doesn't take place in the sort of the major city, the major cosmopolitan, like, oh, this would be a really fun place to visit, then suddenly it's okay. Suddenly it's kind of gotten an allure, and I want to learn about that place. But, yeah, Morrissey whining in Rome, not...
Yeah, it's hard to... Pathetic. Yeah. I'm sorry that there's a bit of background noise, listener at home.
Yeah, I apologize, too. They're doing the lawn out up by my house.
I had tried to institute a rule against clicking on things, but here's that my computer is working very, very hard on this Skype call. It's pummeling my CPU usage, and I'm really not quite sure why it's so overwrought. But if you hear that background noise, it's the fan.
Yeah.
Thing. So, again, you know, sorry, but it's really Chris's fault.
Poor computer. You need a new one. Don't we all?
So, anyway, we've been out and about and doing things. That's why we've had no goat for
almost
around 2 months now.
Yeah. We went to see Neil Gaiman, most recent thing we did. Well, is that the most...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
If it's not the most recent thing, it's one of the most
recent. It's the only one we remember. So yeah. We're going to roll with it.
Which was really happened by accident. Had a friend who could not go, and we got tickets at the last minute from that friend, and it was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
You hadn't been in the music hall in Portsmouth before.
No, not that I can remember, and it's nice. It's a really like well preserved, you know, old theater, and it's quite a nice place to see something. Very hot, I will say.
Yeah. It was nice during those intermission periods where they opened up a door up there on the second level.
But you know about when you see dudes with their program fanning themselves, you know that it's hot.
Typically the dudes, unless they're, I was just listening to our last episode a few minutes ago, and unless they're your gay friend fanning himself with the...
I mean, we're totally cool with it, I should say. It's the kind of thing that macho dudes, all right, admittedly macho dudes don't go to Neil Gaiman, but the guy in front of us was huge, and he was just, you know, like, oh, my stars, and just fanning himself the whole time, and that was kind of, all right, fair enough. I'm not going to tell him.
I mean, I don't think I went as far as fanning myself with it. Did I fan you with it?
No.
Because I'm just not that good a friend.
Not really. but no, it's quite good. And if people haven't seen Neil speak, he's still kind of touring around, I think, at the moment. I don't think he's done yet. And, you know, he did some readings from American Gods, which is out in its 10th anniversary form, which you picked up.
Yeah, and that's I'm about 120 pages in or so now.
Nice.
Really enjoying it. Yeah, He read from it, and I had my only previous exposure to it was when he did, Star Fucking with Kevin Smith, I think was the podcast where Kevin had Amanda Palmer and Neil Gaiman together, and they read an excerpt from American Gods, the three of them, with Neil narrating and Kevin and Amanda playing the parts. So that was my only previous exposure to it, and I really. Really enjoyed the way that he structured the reading because even though he was reading to a hall full of people who had mostly probably read the thing, he structured it in such a way that me, with no previous experience, kind of started to understand the story.
Yeah.
And even if I hadn't pre-purchased the book, he would have sold me on buying the book with that reading, because he started off with one of the Coming to America, is that what they're called?
Well, that's what he called them. So
that's an Eddie Murphy movie.
It's a great Eddie Murphy. It's a credit where credits due.
It's a great. It's been too long.
I swear, the all-time funniest line in any movie of any period by any actor has to be the landlord in that movie when he's showing them around, and they're looking in this terrible apartment, and the landlord turns to them. Damn shame what they'd done to that dog. And it just pans down to the chalk outline of the dog. I'm sorry, but that is just genius.
It's been a long time. I remember mostly that my father and my uncle chuckling at the scenes in the, I don't know, a big pool or whatever, where there's people in there washing his nether regions. Anyway, so he... Neil started with one of those. I did two of those and then read from what I think is based on where he opened up to is pretty late in the book. A scene with Shadow and a girl, I think. Mm. So it was well done. There was a band which
it was a band that which, they Enter Sandman.
And Mr. Sandman back to back, so it segged into that. In a kind of, well, how would you describe the style that they did it in?
It was very odd. They were kind of like what you would imagine this, you know, like if the Squirrel Nut Zippers were still around.
Yes.
And there were just like three of them left. They were kind of like in that vein. They were kind of like a three-man neo swing kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yes. That's, I couldn't think of a way that I would have described it.
I imagine that if you had a movie and there was a party set at the governor's mansion, they might be the band for the kids.
Unless it was a CW TV series in which it would be whoever had a single to promote. Sorry, absolute tangent, but I watched Smallville for years, and that was one of the strangest, just incomprehensible things about that show, and I guess the other shows on that channel, was it, you know, MTV doesn't play music videos anymore, so bands would go to the CW and be like a live band at the Smallville High School dance.
I mean, you'd like, see commercials, and they'd be on, like, the OC or something.
Yeah, and it's just like... They are playing Kansas, a Kansas high school. You know,
sure.
Sure. Okay.
There was always bands that you couldn't respect too, which, you know, I guess fits really. It was always like Maroon 5.
Yes.
Oh God, there's a commercial that runs right now during baseball games for an upcoming concert at Foxwoods for Maroon 5 and Train on the same bill. I mean, if you're gonna do that, like, why not just spend the money, jam pencils in your ears, and, you know, then, I don't know, I just don't understand. Like, oh, the commercial drives me insane.
There are
a few bands that I truly loathe, but Maroon 5 are way up near the top of the list.
I don't know if I necessarily loathe Maroon 5. There's nothing that I really love, but, yeah, I don't loathe is not. What was the other one? Oh, Train. I really know because of Hey Soul Sister.
Right? Yeah. Do you think he really does want to listen to Mr. Mister? I mean, do you think that's incidental? Do you think that he's just like, I want to write a song that talks about my love of Kyrie Eleison, but I'm not sure how to do it. I know. You know, I don't know. Are most people going to get that reference in his Target demo? Is that really what he was coming up with?
I don't know. I know my daughter loves it. It's weird.
Mr. Mister?
I don't know if she's heard Mr. Mister. She's
can we stick it in this podcast right now so everybody knows what we're talking about? I've got it. I'll send it over.
I think so. I think I have a copy.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Of course you do.
I should have a copy, right?
Naturally.
We went and saw Neil Gaiman, there was a band, and there was an interview afterwards, which was...
There was, and that will actually be available Wednesday, the 29th, on... Yeah. Word of mouth on NHPR.
Yeah, NHPR. Yes. I think they'll broadcast it, and then they usually podcast it.
So I'll put a link in the show notes, which we'll actually make for this podcast.
Yes.
I'm gonna make a note right now that says make link.
Yeah, it was in... The interview was pretty good. I liked the rapid-fire questions at the end, although he did say Trek instead of Wars when asked Star Trek versus Star Wars.
And, it's true. It's true.
He did kind of plead the fifth when it came to Yankees versus Red Sox.
Well, to be fair, you asked an English guy about baseball, you know?
Yeah, true. But he has been living in the States for a very long time. That was part of the storytelling he did, was talking about...
how weird we all are in our country.
Well, yeah, and living in Florida in Tori Amos's house and things like that. It was a good evening.
Yeah.
Capped off by ukulele music by Eddie Vedder, which was...
That's true. We also did other things in Portsmouth. And
we did.
One of the things we did was go to Bull Moose, and I got the new Bon Iver, because if I don't, they revoke my, you know, street cred card away. I can't even say it. I'm so intimidated by the street cred card.
By the street cred card. Yeah, I don't have one. Yeah. I don't think I'm allowed to get one.
In fact, I think when I purchased it at Bull Moose, the girl behind the counter, who was really fascinated by my Space Invaders t-shirt.
Mm.
It's really depressing when you meet girls who are like 17 or something in that context, and they're like, Oh, I've seen that. That's really old, right? Like, shut up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, from a distance, it seemed like she was nice, but...
And I hate you. No, she was nice about it, but then I felt like someone's grandfather. I kind of left the store like, yeah, it's old, I guess. I mean, I played it when I was young on my Atari, so it can't be that. Oh, Jesus. But yeah, so I think when I bought the Bon Iver thing, the girl checked me off. I'm pretty sure there was a list. And but we also bought Eddie Vedder's new album, Ukulele Songs, which is really good. And his solo records are really good. The soundtrack he did for Into the Wild was his first one, and that was fantastic. And yeah, ukulele music, which is, I guess, becoming the thing.
Yeah, I mean, Amanda Palmer did... Amanda Palmer plays the popular songs of Radiohead.
Which is really good. I never would have imagined in a million years that would have been a good...
ukulele, Amanda Palmer, Radiohead. You know, not...
Didn't see that coming, but yeah.
No, it's quite good.
It's a really great YouTube clip of her doing fake plastic trees, like out in the street somewhere with the ukulele, and it's really good.
She seems to have picked it. I mean, she only knows a few chords, and that's, I think, where she sort of describes as the appeal of it, is that with just a few chords and knowing the strumming patterns, you could do quite a few songs.
Yeah, ukuleles are kind of nice that way. They're really designed to be a simple instrument, you know, and I think that's, like, their appeal, you know, is that, like Eddie was saying, he said in an interview with Rolling Stone, I think he might mention it somewhere else in the liner notes, was that, you know, they could go to, like, the beach, and there'd be a bunch of guys sitting around a fire, and it was really easy to, like, pull out a ukulele and just start making up a song.
Yeah.
People would pitch in, and
like
he said that he originally started using it just to do that, just to sketch out songs, and then realized that the instrument itself was actually kind of, you know, nice and suited what he was doing, so it ended up being the focus of the album. So it's
I mean, the size of it certainly helped, you know. And I remember that I think it was, I want to say it was Sarah McLachlan in an interview, probably around Fumbling Towards Ecstasy, maybe surfacing, talking about learning to play the ukulele first as a sort of gateway instrument when she was really little.
I guess it's kind of like the recorder of stringed instruments.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple to master,
mm-hmm.
but, well, or rather to pick up and, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was pretty good.
But we also ate at the Coat of Arms. Which is a quote English pub.
Yes.
Having lived in England for quite a while, I was a little bit surprised by the differences. But the weirdest thing was the music in the Coat of Arms. I don't know if this is a thing that they usually do, but it was just like, it was 80s prom night, but then they were doing like deep cuts. Like they played Illegal Alien by Genesis, which if you, listener, did not grow up to the point of 10 wanting to be Phil Collins... as I did.
Right.
Yeah, I said it.
I always wanted to be the other guy.
Mike Rutherford?
Yes. Yes, Mike. Mike and the mechanics guy. No, I wanted to be Phil.
So, right, this is a track on Mama, which is their 1984 album, that... It's one of those songs that you know, like, you're aware that Duran Duran did Rio and Girls on Film and Come Undone, but you don't want to hear the other tracks on those albums necessarily right away, you know? It's not a priority. This is one of those tracks where Phil Collins spends the entire track making a pseudo kind of Spanish-American accent and talks about how difficult it is to be an illegal alien in the most stereotypically British racist way possible, which I think he thinks is funny.
Right.
But it's not funny. it's the kind of Spanish American immigrant thing that you would expect like Kevin Smith to do.
Right.
You know, it's just on Smodcast. It's got that level of racial sensitivity. So
Yeah, it was a very odd soundtrack, and I've been in there a couple of times in the coat, but mostly during noisier times where the soundtrack has not sort of bled through the crowd noise. So I'm not sure if that's the typical soundtrack or what.
I should just point out that the refrain of the song, if you're not familiar with it, and please do go look it up. if you look it up on YouTube, you'll probably find some of the Mamator concert, which used to run on PBS all the time, and which I watched far too often when I was a young child. So if you want to see where it went wrong. But the refrain of the song, the last minute and 45, basically is, you know, Phil repeating, "It's no fun being an illegal alien," over and over and over and over. So good times. That was a weird choice for the coat of arms, I must say. But yeah, the food was all right.
Yeah, well, the food was definitely all right. We had to wait a little while. We were tucked away in a corner, and I don't know if they noticed we were there.
There was I should point out that the coat is one floor of tables and restaurant, and Chris had to call me on the phone while in the restaurant, but on the same floor as me.
But you were in the corner, around the corner, with the corner.
When you couldn't see me in any of the visible parts of the room, did it not occur to you to walk around the corner?
I don't think I realized that corner was there. And to be fair, there was a waitress who served us who I don't think realized that that corner was there.
Well, okay. But well done, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it was an interesting time. Portsmouth turns out to be all right. I am... very different feelings about Portsmouth the last time. Well, the first time I went there in recent memory, where I was just kind of like, oh, it's full of hipsters. Yay. This town would really like to be Portland or somewhere in New York. You know, but...
And that, but that was that, to be fair, was that the day that you were coming to see my play and there was no parking?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were kind of not in the best of moods.
I was sour on Portsmouth. To begin with, it's true, but it's all right.
Yeah, I think I dig it. You know, I don't live there yet, but maybe someday.
Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Or probably not in Portsmouth because it's probably fucking expensive. But somewhere around there, you know.
I think they're mowing your house.
They are. They are. Yeah, it gets obnoxious. But at least I don't have to do it.
That's true. Do you like to sit on the porch and drink lemonade and play Illegal Alien by Genesis while they do it?
Now there's an idea. Although I think most of the guys who mow the lawns here are kind of white guys.
Nice. Well, then they could still be Illegal Aliens.
They could. They could be.
You could say charmingly racist things to them just to see.
Just to see. But what happens if they start saying charmingly racist things back?
That's awesome. That's local color.
Then all of a sudden we're like pals with me having tried to start a joke, but then no.
Now the racism thing's been on my mind because of course I've been watching all the people join the Republican field trying to outdo themselves as to which one is going to be more racist than the others. I'm really entertained to learn, as so many have, that actually all forest fires are started by illegal immigrants. So thanks, John McCain. Good to know. He's not running again, is he?
I don't think he is. At least he hasn't announced.
I mean, surely the Republicans won't allow him to after so completely screwing them before.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's pretty squarely Romney or is it Bachman? Is that the woman?
Oh,
that
God, I would pay money to see that debate.
Yeah, I don't know if I could stomach it.
I want her to be on a ticket with Sarah Palin. Just because I think if that happened, their IQs would drop so far it would pull them into the earth.
I mean, it's already beginning. Like, election years, I typically try not to turn on broadcast television at all. I can't stomach it. It drives me insane. And it's starting already. So
fair enough. I'm intrigued that the Republicans have really lashed themselves to the mast of, we must run the stupidest person we can find.
Well, I mean, Romney's not necessarily stupid. He's just...
He is stupid.
All right. Look at me trying to be nice.
He's stupid because he made a wildly popular healthcare initiative in Massachusetts, which has proven very successful, which was the model for the national healthcare thing. And that's why he has to go around saying, Oh no, that's a terrible idea. State solutions are state solutions. This would never work for everyone. Right. Oh, Jesus Christ. Just take credit for doing something useful.
God forbid they should.
God forbid someone in government should do something useful.
Yeah, no, that would be nice.
But oh well. Speaking of dysfunctional governments, actually, you recently started watching Game of Thrones, which I've been feeding you.
I did, yeah, yeah.
See what I did there? Bam. We're off politics.
We're off politics, thank God. I watched the first episode yesterday while I was doing lunch, and I started eating lunch, and then I turned it on, and then there's this sort of beheadings and disembowelings and stuff that are there at the beginning, and I said, "Oh, lovely," and finished my lunch pretty quickly, and I wasn't quite sure where it was going. As I was saying with American Gods, just as with American Gods, I have no familiarity with the source material.
Yeah, I haven't read the books either.
My friend Leslie can't believe that. There are a couple people who are that I know that are huge devotees of George R.R. Martin.
Yeah.
And for a second there, I was kind of like, am I losing more geek cred that this is yet another thing that I have not read? But so I watched it and really dug it. I think Sean Bean, seeing him in there was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Was not expecting that ending of the first episode at all. I love narrative setups like that where, and of course we're going to spoil things here, I suppose.
I guess we should say spoilers.
Spoilers
incoming. And if you don't like the spoilers, I don't know what to tell you.
Fast forward and kind of hope for the best.
yeah, I guess we'll play a tiny bit of music. You can look.
But seeing as it seems that I've come to this fairly late to the game, maybe we're not really spoiling anything. There's the moment earlier in the episode where the kid who climbs things is told by his mother, stop climbing things. And you know from having read any number of stories or been read stories that when somebody is told that, that means he's going to do it again. And
it's true. You can't put a loaded tower on stage.
And so he, he gets up there and he sees them fucking and like, wow, okay.
Not only that, but they're related.
Yeah, I know. See, he sees, and it's incest, right? That's the brother and the sister, right?
Wait till you get the backstory on that.
So, he sees that and I figured that's the surprise. But then to have him be pushed out the window is... just great. I mean, not that I condone pushing children out the window, but...
Well, not all children.
No. just Eric Clapton's. No. Sorry. That was bad.
I think I'm gonna go.
I'm just kidding. That's terrible.
What did that kid do?
He didn't do anything. I feel terrible. Actually, it brings up a really serious, serious thing that... I am terrified of windows being open in my house.
Well, you bloody well should be with an attitude like that.
Because of that, that like sticks in my brain. If I see a window open anywhere and my child is not like right next to me, because of that, that is forever ingrained in my brain. And
well, I don't think I would go tempting karma like that. Then.
I know. It's so.
Well, all right. I mean,
anyway.
I see your point, but, I mean, in fairness, you live on the second, not the 59th floor.
Right, yeah.
So,
yes.
Yeah. All children bounce. No, it's true. They take considerably less falling damage. They have, like, an increased savings throw modifier or something.
I had heard that.
It's really true. They're quite squishy because their bones aren't fully formed, so...
Right. Well, way to bring it down, Chris.
Yeah, goddamn. Hell with you.
He gets...
No, we're doing our own podcast over here, me and the interns.
You and the intern. Yeah, no, she starts on Saturday, so...
Damn it. I had my own beverage a minute ago.
I'm sorry.
You know how hard it is to open a Coke bottle? I have no idea how the hell these things work. I'm not technically oriented.
So am I in for a lot with this series, having seen the first episode? I mean, have I not seen anything yet?
He's pretty ruthless with his main characters, and I would say just don't get too attached to anybody.
Yeah, and it was the kind of thing where even in the first few minutes, you know, you kind of get attached to the guy who ends up being the deserter, and I think, is he going to be spared? Nope, he's not going to be spared.
No, there's been a lot of sparing going on in this particular season, so it'll be interesting. But it's been a really good season. I mean, it's well, you know, it's for the most part well acted, and it's well put together. It's a good looking show. I'm pretty happy with it. Because I was watching a couple other things as well, like the Borgias and Camelot started before Game of Thrones, and so I was watching those, and those are okay, but you know, they're definitely at a different level of quality.
Right, and we were saying before we started recording, you've seen it all. I think I've watched one episode of Spartacus.
And
the reason that those things, Spartacus and Game of Thrones, connected is this idea of extreme sex and violence. And I don't know if I was just in TV, in real life TV, as opposed to animation. I don't know if I was just sheltered as a kid, but as a young adult. But I just don't remember seeing any series with this much sex and violence. You know, I remember seeing some pretty screwed up Japanese animation when we were younger. But this is kind of a new level. But not in a totally gratuitous way. I mean, I guess there's some of that. But
well, I think the idea behind the show is that, you know, they want to make it more faithful to the nature of life in that time. And, you know, obviously there's a bit of dramatization, but with respect to, you know, which people are nude and when, or the kind of attitudes towards sex among aristocrats.
Right.
You know, like, they're actually considerably more realistic. And I think that that's by design. And I think it is kind of shocking. It's kind of like, you know, for over a century, if you went and you read Aristophanes or something like that, you know, Euripides or something, you got these bolderized versions, you know, the little red and green books from the Loeb Classic Library, and they were, you know, cleaned up by someone with Victorian sensibilities. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they started undoing that. So you go back and you reread the same play and you're like, whoa, there's a lot of sodomy in here. You know, and it was always there.
Right.
So I think that in this sense, it's the kind of premium cable networks trying to take the same risks that these take, you know, because to make themselves more competitive or engaging. But actually, I think it makes for a better show sometimes.
Yeah. I think that there's not as much sort of editing, cutaway trickery to hide that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, when do you think that this? I mean, is it just the cable TV phenomenon, or you think there is sort of a point of where it is? It The Sopranos? Is it you know, what starts this off? I mean, I fell out of. I haven't had cable TV in a very long time, so.
I think cable shows in general have just been getting a little edgier over the last, you know, say decade or maybe a little longer, and I think that's. I think it's kind of, they see it as their mission to push the boundaries, but I also think there's a marketing component to that, you know, like where the network that pushes boundaries, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hand in hand, but I mean, certain types of stories are better told, I think, in a more realistic fashion. I mean, Spartacus would be, it'd be the Robin Hood TV show or Hercules if they just cut out all the really graphic violence, you know, and sex. It would just be like, I'm a hunky guy and I'm scrappy.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know.
It'd be appealing to a certain demographic, but not.
And it changes the kind of danger you feel for the characters too, right? Because so many characters, even key characters in that series, do get, you know, sidelined or maimed or, you know, whatever. So it's, you know, it keeps you on your toes. So I don't know.
The stakes are so high. I think. And so, is a show like Game of Thrones? without spoiling it for me, is it able to sustain the sort of, the stakes are so high in that first episode.
Yeah.
Is it able to sustain it over the...
They just go up every episode.
Oh, wow. That's impressive. I mean, that, I think that would be the sort of challenge of writing something like that would be, yeah, like, make it big at the beginning and keep making it big without it becoming ridiculous.
Well, each season is meant to roughly follow a book.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's 10 episodes, so there's a lot of build.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, a bit of a resolution in the 10th one, but the resolution, of course, because it's part of a series, just drives the stakes up for the next. So it's, they do a really good job of building it, and it doesn't feel usually contrived. You know, mm-hmm, it feels purposeful.
So yeah.
It's good. It feels very much like they're building a proper world. And
A lot of, I mean, all these things sort of give me hope for some of the comic book series that I, that I would really like to see come to TV. There are certain comics, and I think maybe we'll talk about this in a moment. You know, certain comic books that seem to really work as movies, and it seems like the mainstream ones work better as movies because they've always been kind of like, you can tell a bunch of self-contained Iron Man stories.
Yeah,
like you set up who Iron Man is, and you tell self-contained Iron Man stories. Something like Why the Last Man, which my understanding is bounced between feature film and TV a bunch of times, or Preacher, which the same thing. There are these series that would work wonderfully as TV shows, but if they try to do them as films, it's just gonna,
yeah,
it's not gonna work. And so seeing something like this really gives me hope that we might eventually see some of these long form things. Neil Gaiman stuff, I think, would also, Sandman, or they're doing one. Is it an American Gods show?
There's an American Gods show in the works for HBO. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, as I said, I'm 120 pages into that. And there are certain comic and fantasy people I'd love to see their stuff come to sort of visual medium, but I like the idea of TV in some of these circumstances more than I like the idea of films.
I think the unfortunate thing is that, you know, the really basic networks, like Sci-Fi being an obvious candidate, just drop the ball, you know?
Yeah.
The people who run Sci-Fi are morons.
Mm.
These are people who say, well, we don't want to do a lot of, you know, original scripted drama because it's expensive, so we're going to put wrestling on and buy reruns of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah.
I love Star Trek The Next Generation. I really do. But Sci-Fi is supposed to be the network for current sci-fi, you know, and monster movie of the week and wrestling is just a terrible marketing model. And there are still a couple of good shows. I like Eureka. I like Warehouse 13. But looking at their new shows, I mean, Caprica took a lot of chances.
Yeah.
Caprica was a very different kind of Battlestar show. It was very drama-oriented, very political, very, you know, family-oriented in a lot of ways, both mafia and otherwise. And it didn't immediately start off with, here's some Cylons and they're blowing stuff up. It, you know, it gave a very languid kind of backstory, and, you know, maybe at times it could have sped itself up, but that show, it had to go because it wasn't action enough. And they've replaced it now with the forthcoming Battlestar show, which will tell the story of the young Admiral Adama and Cylon War exploits, because that's just more entertaining, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, Stargate Universe, which just went away. I mean, I really liked Atlantis. I really did. I thought by season 3 it had hit its groove and it became a really good show, as sci-fi shows go. And, you know, Universe replaced it, which I was kind of grumpy about anyway. But when it started, they decided it was going to be just, you know, different. It wasn't going to have an immediate enemy. It was going to be character driven. There was a problem, a situation that everybody was trying to live through. And, you know, by its second season, it became a really good show with some really great character development. But it died because, you know, not action-y enough. And, yeah, I don't know. And now they've got this show starting in July, and I thought of it because it's between Eureka and Warehouse 13. It'll be out, called Alphas, which is basically Heroes on sci-fi. And, you know, I don't know. So it's, yeah, TV is tricky because the basic cable channels don't seem to know what the hell to do with themselves. You know, I think I would say that of any of them, Fox is probably the one that takes the most chances, you know?
Because but it also seems to be pretty prone to cancel things.
Right. Yeah, I mean, they're very profit-driven. But, you know, I mean, obviously something like 24 is considerably edgier than, you know, Lost.
Yeah.
And
I have good... I have hopes for... Wait. No, theirs is not the one I have hopes for. Mm. There are the two Abrams plot pilots coming out. And they have... I think Fox has Alcatraz, which I'm not as keen on. And I think CBS has Person of Interest, which...
You know, as far as his TV goes, I will say that I've really been enjoying Fringe. Fringe has been great. And, you know, I think in some ways I actually like it better than some of his other TV shows that I used to really like. I mean, I liked Alias a whole lot until the last season.
Yeah.
When it turned into a crappy fantasy novel. The ending to that series is so disappointing.
I have not seen any of it.
I mean, people gripe about Lost, but if they watched Alias all the way through, they would be for Lost. Yeah, that one was quite poor. But Fringe has been fantastic. And talk about leaving things in a massive cliffhanger. Yikes.
Yeah. I people have been telling me about Fringe, and I've just not ever gotten to it. What night is that on?
Fridays. It moved to Fridays.
Okay. Not that I mean, you know, with iTunes or whatever way that you get our TV series now, you don't have to watch it the night that that it comes out, and I usually don't. But.
They have a really good sense of humor about it. Though last year in the fall, Fox announced they were moving them in January to the Friday night death slot. You know,
yeah.
Like Firefly went to die and other shows go to die. And so the first episode when they came back from the break was entitled Firefly.
That's pretty good.
Well done, guys. But actually, its ratings got better, so hooray. Yeah. That's cool. That's kind of a long TV digression.
Well, yeah, no, but I mean, I think we haven't talked about TV in a really long time. And
are there any other shows we can spoil real quick?
I don't know that I'm watching any. I mean, I can spoil certain episodes of NBC's Who Do You Think You Are?
yeah, that's all right. By the way, that's Lost, pretty much they were all in purgatory. Sorry, guys.
You know, that's pretty much the only show that I've watched. That and Smallville since Lost went off the air. So
and Smallville's all gone now.
Yeah, yeah. Thankfully, it was about time for it.
I heard it died a merciful death.
Yeah, and it was all right. You know, it probably needed to go like 3 years ago.
I don't know, man. I think I'm going to be watching an awful lot of TV when I'm not working on my dissertation. The old car is kind of on the fritz, so.
Yeah,
our adventures may be ended for a little while.
It's quite sad. I mean, you know, but your car has served us faithfully for quite some time.
For 280,000 miles, it has been an intrepid car. And actually, it's not the engine or anything catastrophic. Yeah. It's just the brakes. I think the master brake cylinder needs replacing, which, you know, hooray, more money spent.
Right.
On the venerable car. But hey, you know, it has, in fact, served us well.
Yeah, you know, I mean... It's served us a hell of a lot better than the Tempo ever did.
Tempo would never have made 280,000.
No.
The Tempo was lucky to make 28,000 miles.
You know, to be fair, my mother drove that thing for quite a long time. It probably had close to 100,000 before I even...
Which for an American car is like 600,000 for a Japanese car.
We broke down in a fair share.
We did. I was in your car when it broke down at least 4 times.
Yeah. I was only ever in
Winter Dance.
Yes.
Which was great.
And the amusing thing about that is that the car that we ended up taking to the Winter Dance after my Tempo broke down was my grandmother's Tempo.
Yeah. What was really annoying about that particular breakdown was that my date and I got left behind in this car. And she spent the whole time basically convinced that I had somehow contrived this.
Hmm.
I was like, I have not contrived this. I don't want to be broken down out of gas on the side of the road. And she was just like, uh-huh, out of gas. I'm like, go ahead and start the car. You can't, can you?
No.
I was really, at that point, like, actually, it got really annoying. And I was really tempted to, like, get out and just walk to find you. And yeah. I was kind of torn between the, should I leave the girl stranded alone in the side of the road in a deserted part of Tingsboro and find Chris?
Well, we weren't in Tingsboro for that one, were we?
Yeah, that was on the back road there.
Because I thought that one was I thought that one was when we were near our friend Will's house.
That breakdown was on exit 34, that back road there. I don't know why we were there, but we were there.
Huh. I remember there was a breakdown near Will's house. I don't remember what that was for, but I had to walk to Will's house and they were also going to something, and so they were all getting ready and taking pictures, and I was like, can I use your phone?
And hi, everybody.
Yeah, it was very, very weird.
The breakdowns, though, were at least entertaining. Like, there was always something going on at the time, whereas, like, the one time my car legitimately had a breakdown of sorts, it actually just had an electrical problem.
Right.
Which was exacerbated by the rain.
Yeah. And so, and it didn't quite break down.
Yeah.
It still got us home.
It still went home. Which admittedly yesterday when I discovered my brakes weren't, you know, up to snuff, like I did get home fine. I just,
right.
You know, I was kind of like, ooh, that's a problem.
Yeah. My breakdowns tend to end with me either getting a ride from someone, that I know or a ride in a tow truck, as happened to me, about 2 weeks after I bought my Volkswagen Jetta, and I was driving to Boston, and the timing belt, which was inside the engine,
yep,
snapped and took the top off of the engine with it.
Yeah, those need to be replaced every 80 to 100,000 miles.
Yeah, well, you would think that in their inspection of it before selling it to me, they would have done that. But yeah.
Yeah, that sucks.
I think part of that repair is still on a credit card that we're paying off to this day.
Yeah, I mean, most people wouldn't bother. That's kind of one of those repairs that, you know...
I had just bought it, and I owed, you know, $5,000 on it. You know.
Yeah.
And I had a taillight warranty, you know, drive off, they see your taillights, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, and I... But... Not good for the person who bought it, but the last car that I drove was a Buick LeSabre, and it wasn't going to pass inspection last October. So last weekend of October or something, someone came over and put it on his trailer to tow it away, and he was theoretically going to salvage it for parts,
mm-hmm,
and then sell the rest to the junkyard, and it broke down on him that day,
mm-hmm,
right after buying it from me for junkyard price.
Isn't that the one that had live snakes in the dashboard?
No, that was someone else's car.
I'm thinking of something else. No, fair enough. Yeah, but you know, it's weird because like now I've reached this point where it's like, okay, well, I'm probably going to have a job, so I can get a new car.
Right.
But I have to say goodbye to my car, which is the first car I've ever had, which is the only car I've ever had.
Right.
And yeah. There was a brief period of time where I borrowed my dad's car, but I have to say goodbye, and it's really hard. I mean, my car is 14 years old.
Yeah. You've known your car for a very, very long
time. It is my last tangible link to all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I've become very sentimental about it. Like... Mm. I don't know. Like, I almost want to just, like, keep it. Like, can't we get into the big... Like, I just, well, I, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the infamous Tempo that we've talked about many times,
it's still there,
sat in my parents' yard for a very, very long time. And when that went away...
Is it gone now?
Yeah, it's gone.
Yeah. What happened to it?
I think it got junked a few years ago.
Bastard.
I know. It was sad.
Sorry, listeners.
We're very sentimental about our cars, which is
podcast
not something...
has gone into a sad place.
You know, I don't think people would think that you and I would be sensitive about our cars.
Just that car. I'm not a car person.
I know, like, I when I think about it, like, the Tempo holds a special place in my heart, but the two cars I had after that, which were a Pontiac Grand Am, like a 96 or a 97 Pontiac Grand Am, and the 2000 Jetta, I don't have any sort of attachment to those. I have more of an attachment to the Buick LeSabre, which was Stephanie's car for a while, and then was mine once we traded in the Jetta for this Honda that we have now. Like, so this Honda will, we have a Honda Element that'll have memories because we've, you know, it's been our kid's car.
Yeah.
And the Buick was my wife's great grandparents' car before it was ours. So that had a sentimental connection. But I do have a couple cars in there that nothing.
No, the cars that you spend your time, you know, driving around and wasting time in and goofing off, they form a bond. And I mean, my car, if you average it out, it's 20,000 miles a year.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time in a car. I think the police are coming to take us away.
I think so. I think they heard my Eric Clapton reference.
Son of a bitch.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. This is going to be entitled Generation Goat Number 202, 100 Reasons Why Chris is a Son of a Bitch.
Only 100?
We're not done yet.
Yeah, I'll give you a few more. Here's one. Because I know that, even though I don't think I heard you call me a son of a bitch.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm sure that you were probably thinking it. So recently, we moved Geek Force 5 over to
I said many awful things that day
to your web server,
which I have a VPS, a virtual private server, and it was the thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, consolidate resources and whatnot, and you know, the first part of it went relatively smoothly, and it was the next day that a couple things were not working the way they should have, and yeah, so there's reason 101, because I have a pain in the ass website.
The reason I don't work in tech support anymore is because of the problems where somebody comes to you and is like, "You see that thing? Yeah, I don't like the way it looks. Can you change that?"
And this is exactly what I get.
Well, these are the options for changing it. None of them are great. Yeah, I don't like any of those options. Can you make a new option? No, not really. Not without an enormous amount of work. Could do that. Okay. No. Chris can't abide the idea that a web resource would actually have the name of the file in it.
No, not at all.
So we had to play with HTAccess and rewrite rules. And you would think that it's very simple to write, if you were computer person, to write a rewrite condition that simply strips that out and puts it back in, but then it broke the RSS feed, because the RSS feed depended upon the word which was part of the rewrite. 3.5 hours later, it finally worked.
Yes. And then, of course, the final bit was that Facebook links were not working. I honestly think that the Facebook thing may have been Facebook does all sorts of wonky things about what it decides to store in its memory.
I'm pretty sure that the first time you add a link to Facebook, it caches it, and that's just it.
Yeah. So I think it was looking at the old server for some of this stuff, and whatever. We found a way that is actually the better way to do it. You found it, and then
All about Open Graph. I said, Chris, go find a plugin for this, because I'm sick
of
your dating website.
What's aggravating for me, and I've long since taken off the validate HTML thing, because there's just almost no way to make a page validate 100% of the time when you use things like YouTube or whatever. Because
no, and I mean, you shouldn't aim for 100%. It's just not possible. It's like, if you ask something like, you know, GT Metrics to do, you know, an analysis of your page, it'll always be like, your CSS is inefficient. Like, well, maybe.
Yeah.
But if you start breaking it down, it's like, well, it's inefficient because you don't use block quotes on this page.
Right.
Like, well, I do use block quotes.
I do. Yes, I use block quotes somewhere.
Yeah, you can get into account.
But in this case, so I added the Open Graph stuff, and the Open Graph stuff doesn't validate as HTML5, and I've read up on it, and there's no way to make it validate as HTML5.
You don't have an HTML5 document, so it's not really irrelevant.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it would even validate as XHTML transitional or strict. There were there I looked at it, and it's not the only thing that's breaking my page, so that's why I'm sort of like...
Does the page render as intended?
Yes.
Does it render as intended in all browsers?
Probably not in IE5.
Then shut up.
Right, no, so what I'm saying is, like, I used to... And there was... probably my E. Christopher Clark page would validate, but there was a point at which I would do everything in my power to make the code validate, and it's just so...
There's no reason to.
It's dumb. There's no... Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, web designers, and I'm sure that some weirdo who's listening to this will be like, but SEO, Google doesn't like pages. Google doesn't care. Google doesn't validate your HTML, so just suck it up, walk it off, and live with it, is what I would say to that.
I mean, I like the idea of web standards, nobody can agree on anything. So.
But there's the it doesn't validate because you dared to use the object tag.
Right.
And then there's the doesn't validate because you stuck blink in everywhere. One of those things works. One of them doesn't.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, things like using alt, you know, making sure there's an alt on your images and things like that. Like,
when I think of it, no problem. But if I miss one, I'm not going to, like, you know. Well,
anyway, so there's the part of me, the deep, dark part of me that knows that someday I'm going to be in not a bad mood, but in a mood where I'm like, I should validate my H, and I'll spend like weeks trying to make it perfect. And
just email me and I'll lock you out.
I think I will have to do that because it's such a bear trying to make things.
There's no point. There's no point. I mean, I literally don't care if mine validates or not. My feed validates, and that's the part I care about.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, we moved the server over, or we moved the website over to your server, and now everything's working smoothly. It's faster.
Should be faster.
You know, it's faster than it's ever been for me in terms of putting content up there. I upload an image, I mean, like, completely different experience. So
hopefully the 3 or 4 people that browse our sites will attest to that, you know.
Yeah, hopefully.
But yeah, no, it seems a lot faster. And I mean, it was averaging a 6-second load before we moved, and now it averages a 1.5-second load for me. Yeah, so
it's pretty darn fast.
Private server, the way to go, folks.
Yeah. So we did that. But then we also have done some things not together.
It's true.
You went to Canada.
I went to Canada. I went for 8 days to Canada for a digital humanities conference and some classes, which was awesome because I have felt throughout the life of my PhD that I don't really belong. I'm not an early modern literature person, despite the fact that that's what I use to build my PhD.
Right.
Those aren't the kinds of questions or concerns that I'm interested in. So I've long felt that I'm kind of in the wrong field. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can function and I do okay, but, you know. But going to this digital humanities conference and seeing this amazing playground of people from all disciplines, both humanities and sciences, working together on projects and just being like, what if we did this? What if we did that? It was like all the beautiful stuff about being a computer geek back in the day, married with all the actually interesting stuff about my field. It was perfect. So it was really nice. I got to figure out, like, this is actually where I belong. And I've since come up with 2 or 3 long-term projects, and I may have been offered a job. It's funding contingent, so there's no point getting too excited, but there's a good chance it'll get funding. And there's somebody else who wants to conceivably write a grant to do some work. Me, which is really cool, and it was nice because I could figure out where I was home. And plus, Canada is just nice. It's, you know, it was really pretty. I saw some whales. You know,
I heard about the whales.
Yeah, there were orca. They were doing their thing. You know, the food was really good. Great sushi.
Went to a bunch of barbecues. You said
I went to a ton of barbecues. The guy who ran the institute threw one barbecue at his house for all the people. It was actually 2 conferences, kind of like pushed together. So for the first conference, he threw a barbecue. And you know it's a good barbecue when you've got to your 6th type of meat and it's all tasty. Like, I started with steak tips, and then we moved through some salami, and we got to, like, barbecued chicken, and then there were some pork chops that happened, and then there was, like, you know, some sort of slider thing, and then It was a good time. Yeah. Huh. Not like those Chinese soups where they're like four meat soup and you're like chicken, beef.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is an actual soup, by the way. I'm not just being racist. That is
four meat soup. You're not being Phil Collins there.
No, I think there is actually a seven meat soup as well.
Seven meat. Oh my goodness.
Which is when you're like porcupine, maybe. How can it be? I did that in Italy once, actually. It's a total digression. Like, they have these great things called rosticceria. And at the rosticceria, you just go and, like, they have, like, chickens on spits all day long, and they're super flavorful, but they often have, like, other kinds of meats. It's kind of like a deli. Mm. And so I was in one in Florence, and I was just like, oh, I'm just going to order the mixed meat plate, because what the hell? It all looks good. And so I'm, like, at my plate, like, okay. That one's boar. That one's chicken.
Mm.
That's pigeon. What are these other five? And I had no idea to this day, but they were good, damn it. Anyway, yeah, so Canada was really cool, and the food was good, and people were super friendly, which is a little weird. And it was weird being there during the Stanley Cup thing, you know?
Yeah.
I'm from near Boston, and that made me super popular that week.
Because you were in Vancouver, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just, well, Victoria was the same difference, you know, right across the border. And, oh my God, just people take it to another level, you know, like all the cars have flags on them for the Canucks, and like people are wearing, like everybody's wearing the Canucks jersey.
Yeah.
They've got their faces painted, you know, like they a whole new level. And, but they're Canadian, right? So they really need to kind of work on their smack talk, because like, I'm there at the at the airport, and there are these signs for the aquarium, and like they have the different animals out there that are like, you know, the otter's like the Bruin otter, watch out, or something, you know, or I guess it'd be oat. But so, you know, but then they get to like the moon jellyfish, and the slogan next to it is moon jelly the Bruins. I think they need to practice,
you know? Moon jelly. I'd like to moon jelly Phil Collins for making such a racist song back in the day. No, that
doesn't. There was actually a guy, and I'm sure I saw someone say something similar online. There was this one guy who's like, oh, you're from near Boston? I'm like, yeah. He's like, oh, we're going to ruin the Bruins, eh? And I'm like, yeah, okay. What do you say to that? Like, oh, if only there was something that rhymed with Canuck. Yeah, so it was interesting. And then, like, the first night they had a big mixer for everybody at a bar, and the game, of course, was on. And, like, everybody was glued to it. And that was the night we pummeled them, like, 8-1 or whatever it ended up being. And the people there were so despondent. Like, it was 4-0 at one point, and they were just like, oh, no. It's okay, guys. It's not really an ass-kicking until you're losing by at least 6. And then they were losing by 6. And I was just like, oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's official, though. It's going to go down in the record book as an ass kicking. But yeah, so.
Yeah.
Oh, well, poor guys. They played their hearts out, and then they burned the city down. What do you do?
Yeah, I'm glad you weren't there for that.
And I'm sure it was a very polite riot. I'm sure people were like, do you mind if we flip this car over?
It was a very quiet riot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, quiet riot. I don't think I have any to play under this.
But now I know what I get to play under it. Now I think I've got Come On Feel the Noise somewhere.
Wow. Is that quite right?
Wait, is that quite?
Yeah, I think so.
I think so.
Oasis did a cover of it.
Yeah, and that's, I think I looked up who it was when I heard the Oasis cover.
Wow. Quiet Riot. We heard Whitesnake in the Coat of Arms. That was just bizarre. A, that my brain was like, oh, Whitesnake. And then, what?
What?
Why is that information still present?
Maybe that's one of the seven meats.
I had a terrible dream, actually, thinking about the Coat of Arms and its terrible music. And this is totally random, but I had a dream. And, I mean, listener, imagine this. You're tired. You go to bed. You're looking for rest. And the first thing that floats across your head is that you're at a Mr. Big and Extreme reunion concert.
See, and now I know what I've got to play next.
Yeah, where you're like, oh, maybe I could go to Maroon 5 instead. It's the only time that's going to happen. But, yeah, so Canada was all right, man. And I followed everybody's advice. I went straight to Tim Hortons, which is like their Dunkin' Donuts kind of thing, and had my Timbits, which are like Munchkins, but way more sugary, which was nice. So,
well, you've got a couple of those up in Maine.
There's like one in Connecticut too, randomly, but like they whole bypass.
Yeah. I wondered whether the one in Maine would have the authentic Canadian experience,
though. I would assume so.
Yeah.
Probably get to use blue $5 bills and everything.
Yeah.
But, so, yeah, you've been up to stuff, though. You were, like, posing with naked women, and then...
One naked woman.
And you're in a sketch comedy thing, but...
Yeah, no, we did photos for At My Window, which is the play I'm doing at the Players Ring in September. Starts on Labor Day weekend and goes for 3 weekends after that.
I don't know.
Yeah, and...
Not going.
Yeah, well, you know. The listener might go.
Yeah.
You never know. Especially if we promised, especially if we promised to goat about it, but if you're not going, you could pretend.
I guess there's nudity. So
there is nudity. Yeah.
I guess some people might go.
Well, I don't know if there's nudity. There's the idea of nudity in the press photos, but you know, I will neither confirm nor deny that there's nudity in the play.
I'll confirm it. Just go.
But it's not my nudity.
I wouldn't be telling you to go.
So we did some press photos for that, which was interesting to hear, you know, first my wife's reaction and then my parents' reactions. And
what were they? That's a terrible thing to just gloss over.
What were the pictures?
The reactions.
Oh, what was their reactions? You know, honestly, I don't know if my dad had told me what his reaction was, but my mother thought they were beautiful pictures, and she understands, you know, that it's a play. Stephanie, reacted. She grew up across the street from a theater, not a theater where there was a lot of nudity, but you know, she's been in dance and theater her whole life, so she understands between performance and in real life. Everyone reacted.
How did your dad not give you an opinion? Well, as we were discussing in the last episode, when compelled to go to that gentleman's club for your bachelor party, your dad was there.
He was
giving opinions all night long.
He has a lot of opinions.
Creepy and uncomfortable.
He had a lot of opinions, but I don't think he said anything to me about them. Maybe my mother...
Like your uncle or something, and it was just like, oh, why is Chris doing this?
Well, you know, one of the people whose reactions I'm most curious about is my, not the uncle who was there at the bachelor party, but another uncle who, at a recent family gathering, got on the case of my 13-year-old cousin for the amount of vulgarity he was using on Facebook. And this is a really interesting, you know...
Don't friend family on Facebook, man.
It's a really interesting thing. I'm not sure he'll ever... I imagine he won't listen to this, but... Whatever. So he got on the case of the 13-year-old for the sort of vulgarity and the profanity and whatever that he was using on Facebook. But part of his argument was that his pastor could see this kid's updates. And I was kind of like, no, he can't, because the pastor's not friends with the kid. So are you sitting there and showing your pastor your own Facebook screen? I've never quite figured that out, but so...
You know, someone I met at the conference, they said that their, like, young niece or nephew had remarked that Facebook is for old people. And I think it's starting to become true. I could never friend people like that on Facebook. I've seen my relatives out there. They float around. None of them have come looking for me, which, you know, that makes me feel a little weird. But if I did friend them, they'd go unlimited. Or they would go to my fake profile.
Mm. I was curious what I have not seen him since those photos went up, but I was curious what he thought about that, and if his pastor happened to see, you know, me with the half-naked Liz Locke, who is my co-star. And they're gorgeous photos, and it's a beautiful play, and we're talking about, you know.
Yeah, and guys at home, it's real easy to crop Chris right out of them. Just saying.
Wait, So yeah, I did photos for that, and I'm doing...
Yeah, that was terribly sexist of me. Guys and gals, you can crop Chris right out.
Right.
There. Whew.
There you go.
Dodged a bullet there.
And I'm also doing Port Sketch, which is sketch comedy in the vein. It's a sketch comedy show in the vein of old 70s Saturday Night Live. And so I get... So you have to do I'm storyteller. What's that?
So you have to take a lot of eight balls.
Yes. If I don't take at least three before I do my performance, they don't invite me back.
Yeah.
But I'm doing their... I'll be there opening night with them on the 8th of July, and then again on the 16th of July. I did a show with them at FUBAR, the late great FUBAR in Portsmouth, which is no longer there. I'll probably be doing the same piece. Maybe I'll even memorize it so I don't have to read it from a piece of paper. But I am in the process of memorizing lines and a piano song for the other show. So my brain kind of operates like Kelly Bundy's in that one episode of Married with Children. For everything I put in, something else has to come out.
That's a curious cultural reference.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites.
Wow.
Weirdly.
I mean, that's just... Wow. It's about as random as encountering illegal alien at the Coat of Arms.
Almost as random, yeah.
Wow. There's someone you don't think about much.
No.
Now I want to go watch Adventures in Babysitting for some reason. No, I mean, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead.
Right, yes.
Yeah. There's a movie I haven't thought about in a while. This is going to turn into a podcast of, hey, do you remember that one time? Yeah.
It's going to turn into a podcast that sounds like we took some eight balls before it. No, because if we took eight balls...
It'd be quite frenetic. Yeah. I should apologize to the listener. I have quite a migraine today, so I'm a little bit...
Would an eight ball help your migraine?
I don't think so. Although I read an article recently that there was a study done that there's a non-hallucinogenic chemical analog to LSD, and apparently like it has served incredibly... well in a trial for people with cluster migraines and cluster headaches rather and long-term migraines. Like some people who took this have like had no recurrences in over a year, which is sort of interesting. And you know, it's non-hallucinogenic, so
but that takes all the fun out.
Kind of makes you want to. Well, there was a footnote on the story that the person writing the story was like, I am told that the other one works just as well too. But, you know, I think if you're going to go that route, you might want to get it from a lab and have it, like, properly assembled as opposed to, like, you know, Jeff, the failed chemist who makes it in his basement.
He might turn you into a superhero with his thing. That is the secret origin of many a DC superhero, chemicals spilling on them or breathing hard water fumes.
Yeah. Superhero origins are the weirdest things ever, you know, like... And sometimes it's really frustrating in movies, like the Spider-Man movies. You know, Kurt Connors is there, right? Yeah. And we know he's the Lizard. We know. Right. And he even is like doing wacky DNA stuff, and you're like, here it comes.
Yeah.
And he never becomes the Lizard.
No. I think we will see Kurt Connors in the reboot that's coming. That's what I've heard.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like, what? Why?
Yeah, I mean... There's a similar thing in terms of continuity things. I was just watching while I run in place in the morning with my Wii Fit. I tend to watch action or comic book movies just to keep my interest. And I was rewatching X2 this morning. And one of the continuity problems that somebody has been arguing with me about on Geek Force 5 in regards to Beast is in regards to Beast. So in X-Men First Class, which you and I saw, he starts off human and becomes blue by the end of the movie. Spoiler. In X2, they show a guy called Hank McCoy, Dr. Hank McCoy, on the TV screen who is human. And then in X3, he's Kelsey Grammer and he's blue.
Yeah.
And so somebody was like, try to explain that to me. And my response... yeah, go ahead.
John Martin, Songs to Save Your Life.
Yeah,
I have an explanation for you. They're written by different people at different times for different reasons.
Right. Honestly, I mean...
See, also, all comic books ever. Thanks.
It's... The other thing that they complain about is how can Xavier be walking in the sort of prologue of X3... And I think he's walking in X-Men Origins Wolverine when, in fact, in X-Men First Class, he gets again, spoiler, shot in the back. How can you be walking? Have you not read any fucking comic books?
Hi, sorry, me again. John Martin, songsofsaveyourlife.com. Hi. Yeah, again, that's how all comic books ever work. Thanks.
You know, he's in a wheelchair for 10 years. He's walking for 6 months. He's back in the wheelchair. He's in a, this is the way Xavier works. Same thing with Beast. Beast has gone back and forth between Blue Beast and normal human.
Psylocke, for God's sake. Is she good? Is she bad? Flip a coin. Or the White Queen.
Is she Japanese? Is she British? I mean, yeah, like,
just flip a coin, you know? And
I think, and I still want to, I could write an essay on continuity in those movies and make them make sense. I don't think there's anything that can't be explained.
I think there are continuity errors, but I also think that's a consequence of the movies being done by different people at different times. And, I mean, yes, I can see where it's frustrating, because generally speaking, if we take Uncanny X-Men, largely the stuff that has already happened carries over. So if Jean Grey is dead. Then they monkey with it. But, you know, there has to be a monkey with it moment. They don't just reboot like Spider-Man or Captain America or something, where just in the middle of a run, they'll be like, let's start over. You know, fine. But they're comics, and those are the rules of the comic universe. I mean, there was an X-Men run in the 70s, early 80s, where they did something and made Professor X walk around again, and it lasted like 3 issues, but, you know, I mean, it happens.
There's only so much that you can do with these characters when they're not allowed to age.
It's not Days of Our Lives. It's, you know, they can't be serial for 45 years or more and, like, still work.
Yeah. So I really enjoyed X-Men First Class.
That was great.
And
Frost is a little boring, but I thought it was a great job overall.
Yeah, and I enjoyed Thor. I'm not a huge Thor fan, but I enjoyed Thor. We have not seen Green Lantern, but based on what we've heard, it sounds like what we thought is true, that it sucks.
It just looks awful. I mean, I'm sorry, DC fans, but good lord.
I would love to see them, DC that is, be able to come out with a movie other than a Batman movie that was good.
Okay. Chris Nolan's going to do Superman next, so we're okay.
Well, he's only writing it.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Zack Snyder, who I guess DC has put out Watchmen, which is technically their property, and that was great. I really love, actually, the only version I've seen is the super extended version that is the director's cut plus the Tales from the Black Freighter animated movie sewn into it. And that's a deeply sort of immersive. If I could have that kind of comic book movie,
yeah,
for Preacher or Why the Last Man, I would take it. You know what I mean? I'd rather have a series, but anyway.
The weirdest thing happened, like, this is how out of the loop I get with comics, is that on one of the sci-fi sites recently, they put up a thing. They're like, is this the new Justice League of America? Because, you know, DC's rebooting everything.
Yeah.
And it was like, in this recent sketch by Jim Lee, blah, blah, like, wait, what? Yeah. Like, there was actual cognitive dissonance for a moment where, like, wait, Jim Lee writes, he draws for, what the, how the,
huh? I can explain that in, like, 30 seconds.
It was just so mind-bending. Like,
well, so, Jim Lee was one of the four or five that left Marvel for Image back in the day. Jim Lee's studio, Wildstorm, got bought by DC in the late 90s, early 2000s.
I see.
And so they continued to sort of operate independently, but recently they were absorbed. Jim Lee was elevated to co-publisher, I think, or co-editor-in-chief. He's doing DC books. He's actually done a couple of fairly good runs. He did a Batman run and a Superman run. The Batman is better in the last 10 years or so. He is on Justice League.
Kind of blew my mind. I was like, what? No.
It's pretty weird, yeah.
I mean, it was about as weird as if I had seen, like, and in this new Eric Liefeld issue of Spider-Man, Oh.
He is doing, apparently they're bringing, now I know nothing about this series from back in the day, but he got his start on a series called Hawk and Dove. And they're bringing back Hawk and Dove as one of their 52 new number one issues when DC relaunches their whole line in August and September. And they're bringing back Hawk and Dove with Rob Liefeld drawing it. Like,
yeah, Rob Liefeld, sorry.
Yeah.
My bad. But that is so many new books. Mm. I mean, they can't possibly keep that up forever.
They're gonna launch 52 brand new titles. I guess they'll probably see what happens.
My guess is that some of them will become digital only.
Yeah,
you know,
it's possible. I mean, that's the other big component of that news is that they're gonna have digital copies available on everything the day of release.
I mean, goodbye comic book stores.
Well, I mean,
small struggling comic book stores anyway.
Yeah, but if you think about it, they operate, the comic book store, I think, can operate in the same way that, like, a good record store can operate. Where, like, you know, I try like mad, and music blogs like yours help to find new music, right? But there's nothing like walking in and, like, talking to the record store peeps and finding it. And I think the same is true of comics. If there was a big chain like a Borders or a Barnes & Noble of comic book stores, I think, yeah, that would, DC going digital would be the end of that. But I still think the indies, like a good indie bookstore.
I see your point. I mean, I also think that there's stuff like, there's the X Comics app for the iPod, iPad, which allows you to browse issues, you know, which is kind of... But yeah, I mean, I guess it's hard to replace human knowledge, but you got to imagine that at some point, comic-oriented blogs will fill in that knowledge the way that music blogs fill in that knowledge for a lot of people. And
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It's
I suppose so.
It's interesting. I mean, I think, yeah, I like comic book stores, and I hope they stick around. But I think it will be a change in their paradigm. Like, I think they will have to kind of stress that, you know, well, we have a wealth of other stuff, and we also have experience. Come talk to us. Get into books.
I think the ones who, and I think the anti-social comic book stores are the ones that will suffer. And by that I mean...
Oh, back to my first point then. Goodbye, comic book store.
Well, but there's a difference between, say, and I think the comic store here in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
Is one of these that has the sign up on the racks, or at least they did the last time I went in, that says, you know, this is, you're not allowed to browse.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, like, that's their stores that have that kind of sign up there and that kind of policy, they're going to fail, because the whole point is allowing me to go in and browse.
So why put them on the wall at all if I can't look at them?
Yeah.
And the comics now are, what, $3?
They're $3 or $4. I mean, DC, I think, has gone back down to $2.99 on a lot of their titles, but Marvel's are regularly $3.99.
I mean, there were books when I started that were still 75 cents a dollar.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, it was less of an investment, but I'm not going to plunk down $4 and get committed to something if I can't at least open it.
Yeah, no, I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch, too, is whether or not they eventually start to bring down those digital prices, because it's the same war that's going on between ebook distributors, and like some publishers want the ebooks to be the same cost as the hardcover, you know, and it's just,
no. You can't justify that, because the price as it is not predicated on content. It's predicated on content plus materials plus distribution plus whatever.
Right.
And I mean, if you strip out materials plus distribution or change the distribution method, that it can't be the same price, and it shouldn't be.
But DC, you know, is going to charge the same cover price to buy it digitally on the day it comes out.
It won't last.
And apparently, if you wait a month, you will get it for $1 off.
Yeah.
You will get $1 cheaper. But still, like... And I'm not
sure
expecting
they'll say, if you want to buy like a run of back issues, we'll give you a certain discount.
It's like, I'm not expecting things to go back to $1, but you know, $2, please.
Like, I mean, there are real problems, right? And a lot of musicians are really annoyed that Apple said, no, $1 is what a song costs.
Mm.
And you know, in some ways, as soon as they did that, that was the death of the album, because You know, no one's... I mean, you hear the argument, it's a dead, tired argument. You know, I'm not going to pay $16 for a CD when there's three songs I like. And I think what happens when songs cost a dollar is that the songs I like become a very inscribed subset of songs that everybody likes.
Yeah.
And the rest of the album gets ignored by all but, like, real fans of a particular artist. And, you know, it obviously still costs a whole lot more to make an album, so there's a lot more pressure to create a hit. There's a lot more pressure to... you know, license to branch out into other markets. It's a difficult prospect. I mean, it's incredibly rare now that an album will sell 500,000 copies. And if you think about the 80s or the 90s, I mean, how common was that? You know, and it's...
Yeah.
It's interesting because it does change the way that music is experienced. And I think once comics move into an electronic medium, you know, then, you know, do you just keep replicating the comic book? Or do you say, well, we've mentioned the Justice League in this issue of Batman. Maybe we should make that a hyperlink. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe if Batman references something that happened in the Justice League, we can make a link and then it will cut to that panel.
Right.
And then we can cut back. You know, do they become more interactive? And that's where I think you can justify the cost, is when you add content right. that is unique to the medium. But if you're just giving me pictures of a book, mm-hmm. don't charge me for a book.
Yeah. And I'm on the side of, I would rather, at least right now, I would rather just get the pictures of the book.
Yeah.
Because I've seen what Marvel does with their so-called motion comics,
right.
which look like animation, like animatics that you'd see on like the bonus features of a DVD. They're just terrible.
No, I'm not saying that's what I want. I'm just saying if you're not going
to
innovate.
I like your idea. I like your idea of hyperlinks and things that would allow you to, you know, to have a more rich experience given what is possible with the technology.
I think it'd be nice. You know,
I just hope that they don't go ho-ha and make me sort of watch animated things and yeah. like, you know, let me view it as a comic book.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I mean, I think it would make sense. It's not like they have to sell you the rights to the second book, you know, just that panel. You know, that can be part of what you purchased when you bought your issue of Batman or whatever.
Yeah.
Those are my two cents for the comic industry. Mm. Well, what do you think?
I think that's a pretty good cerebral place to wrap up. I feel like we were pretty on target this time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not bad. Going to come in just under an hour and a half. So if we cut out all the dead weight, we got like 5 minutes. So
yeah, you know.
Anything we need to spoil or tease before we go?
Greedo shot first. No,
did not. He did not. Han shot first, you son of a bitch. That is... not even going to go there. Suffice it to say that you might find Geek Force 5 offline today and Han shot first banner in its place.
I had to give you 102 things to hate about me today.
It's on the list. I may do that. I'm just going to take Geek Force 5 down right now. I'm going to make a note. Shot first. Done. All right. Well, fair enough. Thanks for, you know, hanging in there, listener. And yeah. I don't know. We'll probably come back. We actually have a new project in the works, which is super secret, so we can't tell you. But it's definitely a game changer, at least in terms of like my music sites. And I think in terms of collaboration, it's a whole new world. So
it definitely is. There's going to be mermaids.
Very exciting. Yeah. There's the fish under the sea dance.
Enchantment under the... No.
Right. So hang in there. We have cool stuff coming. Enjoy your summer. And, you know, thanks for stopping by.